ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If you live in a city in Australia, chances are your housing costs have climbed astronomically over the past few years. Rents in Australian capital cities increased 12% in the last year. And if you're trying to buy a house, those have shot up on average 85% in the last decade. You might think that's just what it costs to live in a city these days. And you might think that maybe it's not the case elsewhere. But in New Zealand's biggest city, Auckland, house prices are actually in decline whilst rents are on the way up. They're doing it so much slower rate, really, than the rest of the country. This means that it's now, on average, more affordable to rent in Auckland, in the country's biggest city, than it is the rest of the country. So what's going on here? How did they do it? Matthew Maltman is an economist at independent research organisation, the E61 Institute. Matthew, Auckland has pursued a particular kind of housing strategy since 2016. Tell me exactly how they did this.
Sure. Thank you for having me. So in 2010, there was an amalgamation of several local councils within Auckland City into one local council. And as a result of that, they had to come up with a new zoning and land use plan, which was referred to as the Auckland Unitary Plan, which first came into place around 2013 and then fully in 2016. And as a result of that policy, around three quarters of the suburban land in Auckland was what we call upzoned. And so essentially that means that three quarters of the city before, you could only build a detached house on any particular block of land. And then after the policy was implemented, you could build three stories high and about three units on each block of land, as well as more intensely around transit corridors, you know, apartments and things like this. So it was a pretty radical change to the land use policies within Auckland. You know, in Australia, in many parts of our major cities, you can only build detached houses, but this was a pretty radical change. As a result of that policy, there was a significant increase in housing supply. Two separate studies out of the University of Auckland using different techniques have quantified that it probably doubled the rate of housing construction over the following 6 or 7 years. And lowered rents by 10 to 20%. So this is a pretty radical change to their land use policy and seemed to have a pretty strong effect on housing supply and affordability.
So yeah, this is unusual to wave a magic wand like this and rezone an entire city. There's obviously been the impact on the cost and availability of housing, but can you break it down a bit? How have housing costs changed? And can we be sure it's because of this policy alone?
Yeah, so what we see is that prior to 2016, Auckland was the most expensive part of the country to rent in, which is what you would expect. It's a huge part of you know, the New Zealand population and economy. It's where a lot of migrants come into, and it has very high income growth relative to, you know, the rest of the country is kind of a central center of productivity and jobs and things like this. But then after 2016, what we saw was that rent started to grow slower in real terms and slower relative to income. So rent-to-income ratios in Auckland since the policy have dropped by about 2 percentage points. So if you're an Aucklander renting, you're spending on average 2% less of your paycheck on rent, while within the rest of the country, as we've kind of seen throughout Australia, rents continue to rise, particularly over the COVID, after the COVID pandemic, as people wanted, you know, more space to live and things like this, and international migration returned. So there was a sophisticated study out of the University of Auckland, which tried to kind of compare Auckland to other places within New Zealand that looked at areas that were similar to Auckland throughout the rest of the New Zealand you know, country in terms of their rental markets, and found that if Auckland continued to track kind of its pre-trends and how these other cities looked, the rents would be about 10 to 20% higher. So that's a pretty significant impact, and we're quite confident that some proportion of this is due to this upzoning policy and the increase in supply throughout the city.
If you waved this magic wand in any of Australia's capital cities and said all of a sudden everything is upzoned, you'd have pitchforks on the street. I mean, was there massive pushback by homeowners and investors?
Yeah, so it's quite an interesting question. So it's kind of an understudied issue, but what we often see, in particularly in places like Australia, is these decisions are made at a very local level. So if you imagine, you know, there's a change to kind of your land use and zoning policy within your particular suburb, then, you know, residents will probably be opposed to that. But when you kind of spread it out over the entirety of the city, the costs and benefits of that are felt by the entire population. So, you know, young people who are being pushed out to the urban fringe and kind of into other areas that they don't want to live in, they don't really get a say stay within local democracy because they're not within these kind of well-established expensive areas to live. So, you know, what we saw in Auckland was that because it happened across the whole city, potentially the costs were not entirely borne within one area, but also the benefits were spread across the region. And what we see when we poll, wide-scale polling is done of Aucklanders is that they had a strong and positive view of the policy after it was implemented. So, you know, even at the time there was some resistance, after the fact they seemed to be quite happy with the results.
Yeah, fascinating to, as an experiment and as an alternative to the approaches that are being taken in Australian cities. There have been some criticisms of this approach, particularly that infrastructure hasn't been paired with new houses. We see this in areas of rapid growth in corridors north of Melbourne, for example, or west of Sydney, where schools, hospitals, shops, transport seems to take its time when people are already living on the ground. So, you know, things like a big increase in traffic jams in some places were reported in Auckland. So could that also be why the rents and prices are lower, because people don't want to live in these new houses that the rezoning has allowed to take place?
Well, what we do see is that, you know, population in Auckland has continued to go up. So kind of people are still, voting with their feet to remain there. It's still kind of the hotbed for, international migration to arrive within that city. And on the infrastructure point, what you do see is that there was more intensive upzoning around kind of transport corridors. So yes, absolutely. If you kind of build a greater degree of housing on the urban fringe, you have large infrastructure costs associated with that. You have to build new schools, new hospitals, new roads and things like this. But when you intensify within the inner urban areas, there's a lower kind of infrastructure cost associated with this. What we see, for example, in New South Wales with a recent policy to build more around transport corridors, that's a way that you can kind of take away pressure off congestion and things like that, because people are able to catch the train, you know, instead of driving everywhere, for instance. But it's often a chicken and an egg thing where, you know, people don't want new development in their neighborhood because they're worried about the costs that we'll put on infrastructure, but then people don't want to build new infrastructure in their neighborhood because there's not the demand for it in the short run. So often at some point you have to kind of break that cycle, you know, build new housing in a new neighborhood, and then governments have to be responsive to that and make sure that there is things like sewerage and transport available for people once they move into those areas.
The New South Wales government and Premier Chris Minns announced late last year a strategy designed to sort of fast track low and medium density housing in key areas of Sydney, the Hunter, the Central Coast and other places. How does this compare to the New Zealand approach? There is similarities in the proximity to transport and the increasing or the upzoning next to train stations. Is that at all comparable? It sounds like it's only a sort of big toe in the shallow end compared to what Auckland's done.
Yeah, so it's certainly a really positive start. So Auckland had very intensive upzoning around kind of transport and these kinds of areas. And then there was another policy which was implemented across New Zealand as a whole, which was the National Policy Statement on Urban Development, which prevented local councils from requiring parking around transit stations and upzoned around transit stations. So the New South Wales approach is very much within the vein of kind of that broad scale New Zealand approach. It's certainly a really good step in the right direction in terms of allowing for better use of infrastructure and intensifying areas where people want to live. The key difference to the Auckland approach was Auckland had more of a wide scale approach across suburban areas. So in kind of most neighbourhoods, you're able to build, as I mentioned, three stories high, three units on each block. That's not something that the current government of Australia are pursuing, but certainly in terms of those concerns you raised about infrastructure and things like that, building more around transport is certainly a very positive start and a better way to get good use of that infrastructure.
An interesting alternative for Australian governments and planners to consider. Matthew Maltman is an economist at the E61 Institute. Great to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.